The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. And this is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, June 6th, 2018. I'm Kyle Kellums. Later this hour, Timothy Dennis helps us musically map out the second weekend of June. He has his usual Wednesday list of live music that takes us through the weekend and is all over the map. Ahead on 91.3, on NPR's Here and Now, a bike accident last year left Daniel Grossman paralyzed in the lower half of his body. Now he's back at work as an ER doctor at the Mayo Clinic. Back, he says, in many ways, a better doctor than he was before. His story and this afternoon's news beginning at 1, right after Ozarks on Here and Now. And later today, downtown Bentonville Incorporated will help launch the Wednesday Farmers Market in Bentonville under the vine at 8th Street Market. 20 vendors are expected from 3 to 7 today, and if you go, you can also take advantage of a complimentary tour of Bike Rack Brewing's brewing facility. It's part of DBI's celebration of Art and Culinary Week. More at downtownbentonville.org. What happens to migrant children once they reach the U.S. border has been a much-discussed topic over the past month. There have been reports that the government has lost track of about 1,500 immigrant children. Then there was the announcement that the Trump administration has instituted a policy of separating children from their parents at the border. To sort through some of the immigration law surrounding migrant children, we reached out to Laura Ferner, a partner at Crouch, Harwell, Fryer, and Ferner. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda visited the Springdale-based law firm last week, where Laura explained what happens to unaccompanied minors who show up to the U.S. border depends on what country they're from.
In 2008, there was a law that passed. It's called the Unaccompanied Minors in the Trafficking Victim Protection Act of 2008. It's a TVPRA, and that passed in 2008, stating that children that come from basically anywhere south of the border except for Mexico, that these children are deemed to be asylum applicants and that they have the right to apply for asylum, and that custody of these children be transferred to the Office of Refugee Resettlement and HSA. HSI, which I guess is like our version of the federal version of like Child and Welfare Services. And these children are then to be placed with family members or close family members or close family friends, or like in the best possible scenario. And then usually that happens. So a few years ago, I guess in 2013, I started representing the first kids in 2008, 2009. And then there was a big influx, I want to say maybe in 2012 or 13, when there was like, I think one year we had like over 40,000 children come. And I saw a big influx of unaccompanied minors coming to me. And a lot of times these children then were referred to social services, like private social services, like Lutheran social services. And I had a social worker contact me a lot. And other nonprofits contacted me a lot. So I did a lot of those cases for pro bono for a while.
So once the kids got sent to you, then what happens? Because they're still part of a legal process. The first part of putting them with their family is just the first part of that process.
Yes. So the majority of these kids were teens. So a lot of times they were first placed into group homes all over the country. And at that point, then it was ascertained where the closest family member was. A lot of times these children did have at least one parent in the United States, sometimes two. And so if parents could be found, they were placed in custody with the parents. And that's how these kids ended up in Arkansas, a lot of them. And from there, they still had immigration court proceedings. So at that point, then it was decided if they've had lawyers like me or other nonprofits, I guess, then, you decided what was the best legal strategy at that point to do.
And so with some of the kids that you've had, I guess they're applying for asylum, and then that's a whole judicial process that you kind of take them through.
Yes. So if a child is designated as an unaccompanied minor, they get to apply for asylum with the Immigration Service as the asylum office instead of the court. And the benefit to that is that it feels less threatening and less intimidating because you file the application with an office and then you go to an interview with an officer and it's just the officer and you and I guess your lawyer. And they just kind of, it's like a conversation like you and I are having, and they're just asking questions about why you left your country, what are you afraid of, and making those determinations.
Have a lot of your clients been able to get asylum?
It's hard for me to get a number. So when somebody comes to me, I do a screening process to see if you qualify for asylum, because if you do not and you file what is in the law we call a frivolous application for asylum, you can actually get in legal trouble. This means that if you file an application with false information, not a weak claim, just because you lose your asylum claim to case doesn't mean it's a frivolous application. It just means it didn't meet the criteria of asylum. But it's somebody who would make up stuff or lie about stuff. And at that point, then you decide how strong the case is and you try to see if there's other avenues to stay here in this country or not.
Yeah. So there's other avenues other than asylum for some of these people?
For some children, there is a process called the Special Juvenile Immigrant Visa, and that is for children who have been abused or neglected or abandoned by at least one parent. And that reunification, and that has a predicate to it that there is a state court or a juvenile court that has decided that it is not in the best interest of that child to return to their home country, or that they that reunification with their parents or both one or both parents is not a viable option.
Okay, so that's an option. Say I apply for asylum and I get asylum, what's the next step?
Okay, so if you apply for asylum and you're granted asylum, then you're considered an asylee. And after 1 year of being an asylee, you can apply for residency, legal permanent residency, or adjustment of status is the correct term.
And then from there, like other permanent residents, you can go on to possibly apply for citizenship after a certain amount of time and qualifications and that whole long process.
That's correct. So after 5 years, and if you're over the age of 18, you can apply for citizenship.
Okay, so there are options. In the immigration world, how often does it happen that someone gets asylum? Is that something that happens often, or?
Well, it's pretty hard, and it's especially hard for a lot of these kids who, you know, they don't have the monetary funds to hire attorneys, and now legal funding for a lot of these organizations that provided legal representation for these children has been cut. So a lot of these organizations have no money at all to represent children, which is extremely hard. So I'm going to try to explain to you the qualifications for asylum. So then you see how hard it is to actually get asylum. And then, especially if you're pro se, meaning you don't have legal representation. So the law of asylum is ever evolving. And it dates back to, like, you know, human rights conventions and things like that. But in the United States, if you apply for asylum, you have to show that you have suffered past persecution or you have a well-founded fear of future persecution on account of one of the five enumerated grounds. And these are your race, your political opinion, your religion, your ethnicity, or your membership in a particular social group, okay? Well, now, most of these children that come from Central America, they would fall under the particular social group realm because, you know, most of these children are Catholic or Christian, and those kids are not being persecuted. You're not being persecuted usually for that in El Salvador or Guatemala or Honduras. So it comes down to the definition of a particular social group. And I have to look it up every single time, I argue, because it changes all the time. And it's also very complicated. So this particular social group has to be particularly defined, meaning there has to be limits to the bounds. It has to be socially distinct, meaning that it is recognized as a group in the society. Doesn't have to, it used to be that it had to be socially visible, that people, you had to be recognized as that such. And and that it is comprised of members that have a trade that should not, that they cannot or they should not be required to change. So like gender, for example, has been held to be a social group. Now, as I said, this definition changes constantly, and it's hard for us lawyers to keep track of it. I can't imagine what it would be like for a pro se client to go before the immigration court or the asylum office and articulate this, his or hers membership in a particular social group. And the last part of that is that the government cannot or doesn't want to stop the actor from persecuting you. So you have to meet all of those in order to qualify for asylum. So it's an extremely hard thing to do.
And I imagine a lot of people who come here seeking asylum don't know all that. They just know that they hear the word asylum or think that there's a safe place, and so they give it a go.
Correct. I mean, there's just no way. A lot of people don't know, you know. They just, I mean, a lot of these people come here because they have a real fear, right? And especially kids, they are afraid. A lot of them don't have parents that live in the that live in their countries. A lot of these parents live in the United States or and have for a long time. And so they are not protected by anybody. They're the most vulnerable population in those countries. And a lot of times they had aging grandparents that have passed away or other reasons. You know, there's many reasons why some of these kids come. Gang violence, gang recruitment efforts, domestic violence victims. I mean, anything that you can think of has happened to some of these kids. And then a lot of them, unfortunately and sadly, get extorted and exploited on the way down or up, I guess.
Right, coming north from South America and Central America. One of the reasons these unaccompanied minors have been in the news lately is because an official with the Department of Health and Human Services reported that the government has lost track of, or some wording like that, lost track of about 1,500 kids that they're missing. And there's been a lot of reports on that, and then some reports after that to kind of explain what they mean by missing. Because I think when you hear a child is missing, you think, you know, they were snatched and taken somewhere, or maybe ran away, even when we say missing. But as far as the, I guess, legal definition, it's not quite that in this situation.
Correct. I think the term missing is a little misleading. I mean, it's, so like I said, these children are then often released. Once they come here, they are released to their parents or other family members or other close family friends or something of that nature. And within the recent year, last year, the government started to, upon check-ins with the Office of Refugee Resettlement and other places, or when they went to court, some of the parents started getting arrested, were being arrested. So at this point, then, these children are a little scared to show up to court. In addition to, these are children, these are teenagers, and I don't know, I'm sure most people can sympathize with this, but, you know, sometimes my daughter, who is a teen, doesn't answer her phone. Okay, I mean, sometimes I can't get a hold of her for a full day, you know, when I'm at work and she's off school or whatever. So I think that's also something. Just because somebody doesn't answer their phone doesn't mean they're lost. Or when people have changed their phone numbers, a lot of my clients change their phone numbers and don't advise me of it, even though I tell them, I need you to tell me, and they don't advise me. And then sometimes I don't hear from them for like a year until like they're like, oh, yeah, I need to go check on my case. And then I've been trying to get a hold of them and I can't. So there are many variables as to why these children are not in contact.
So it's as simple as they were calling to check in on these people. Maybe they didn't answer the phone, or maybe they didn't return the phone call, or maybe the number has changed. And so it's just they're not entirely sure where they are. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're lost in the traditional sense.
That's correct. They're not lost in the traditional sense. And also there's been reports about some of these children being released to human traffickers. And I find that report to be highly misleading because a lot of parents recently have been labeled human traffickers because they brought their children here or funded the coyotes who brought the children here. And to me, that is then to say that these children are being released to human traffickers, and there's all this rampant abuse of children going on, is completely misleading. While I'm not going to say that there's no abuse, because there always is, but there's also in our foster care system in the state, there's some abuse, but that doesn't mean that all foster parents are abusive either. You know, it's kind of the same thing.
So by labeling a parent human trafficking, is this a legal definition, or is this just sort of one person's opinion that they're saying, oh, well, I'm calling them a human trafficker because they're taking this child from across the border?
There's actually been reports of parents being arrested at these check-ins and then being charged with the crime of human trafficking. And so that then prevents this parent in the future of becoming a permanent resident because they have that charge against them.
But not in all cases, but there have been some.
Yes, I personally haven't had any, so I can't say that. But I do know of other attorneys that have had clients where this has happened.
And speaking of other attorneys, I have read some information from other attorneys across the country about what's happening right now in the news, that we have this issue over here of people thinking that the children are missing. But at the same time, we also have Attorney General Jeff Sessions saying that the administration is instituting a policy of separating parents and children at the border. And those are two separate things.
Those are completely two separate things. And this is a new policy that they have decided to do because they are charging these parents that are coming in with the crime of illegally entering the country or the crime of human trafficking. And because then those parents are being charged with criminal activity, they are then transported to a real prison. And at that point, I mean, real prison in quotation marks, because immigration detention centers are, for all intents and purposes, real prisons, and they look like real prisons, and they're run like real prisons. But so then those children are being separated from their family members.
That was immigration lawyer Laura Ferner speaking with Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda. Laura is a partner at Crouch, Harwell, Fryer, and Ferner, a law firm in Springdale. Just ahead on this Wednesday Ozarks, more international confusion. How will tariffs and possible trade dust-ups with other countries affect American and Arkansan farmers? Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek brings us a conversation about concerns over tariffs in just a moment. Springdale is getting a new bike skills park. Officials gathered on the southeast section of the Jones Center campus yesterday to host a groundbreaking ceremony for the Runway Bike Park. The park's name comes from its close proximity to the Springdale Municipal Airport. Ed Clifford, CEO of the Jones Center and the Jones Trust, says the new park is a great addition to the downtown area.
This project significantly enhances the downtown Springdale project. We are going to create footsteps in downtown that wouldn't have been here without this bike park. So I think that it fits everything that the Jones Trust Board wanted to do, and we're really pleased to be able to announce it today.
The Runway Bike Park will be constructed on about 3 acres. Mike Gilbert, Chief Operating Officer of the Jones Center and the Jones Trust, says including the acquisition of the land, the project will cost $1.3 to $1.4 million. A significant portion of that cost is being covered by a grant from the Walton Family Foundation worth about $1 million. Gilbert says they expect to have their permit by the end of the week and start drainage work early next week.
I think that the key about our park is that our skills park is built for kids and all skill levels. And so we'll specifically have a Strider course and beginner lines that are designed to teach a child who has never been on a bicycle the skills necessary to go out into the wilderness trails. And that's a big deal.
Once construction is complete, Gilbert says they hope to create programming for students.
Primarily, the programming during the school year is a big focus for us, trying to get children into mountain biking and biking as a whole is one of our focus areas, and so we will be working with the school districts
to program with both elementary schools, middle schools, and the high school system.
The Runway Bike Park will also be making an impact on the international stage. Springdale is scheduled to be the site of the Red Bull Pump Track World Championships October 13th.
The Red Bull event came about because Velo Solutions is the pump track manufacturer who will be building our pump track. The Red Bull event is actually the Velo Solutions pump track series sponsored by Red Bull. And so in conversation with our pump track builder, we expressed a desire to potentially host an event in the future. There was something that came up that allowed us to have the opportunity about the discussion of hosting the event in October of 2018. And we're game to do it. We want to be able to show off, obviously, our new facility, but also all of the biking infrastructure in Northwest Arkansas.
The Runway Bike Park project is expected to be completed by Labor Day.
Walton Arts Center welcomes singer, jazz pianist, and songwriter Diana Krall back to Northwest Arkansas Thursday, June 28th. This Grammy and Juno Award winner is promoting her newest album, Turn Up the Quiet. Tickets available at waltonartscenter.org or 443-5600. Ozarks at Large is supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville. Dedicated to the celebration and documentation of this region's history and culture. The 26th Friends of Hospice Summer Garden Party is Saturday, June 16th at the Count's residence in Springdale. Guests may enjoy the grounds, entertainment by Ultra Suede, live and silent auctions, plus food and spirits to toast Arkansas's oldest hospice program. Proceeds support Friends of Washington Regional Hospice patients and families experiencing life-limiting illness. WRegional.com/gardenparty or 463-GIVE for tickets.
Ozarks at Large has been following the Trump administration's decisions on tariffs since earlier this year. Last week, the president announced he was placing steel and aluminum tariffs on Mexico, Canada, and the European Union. Canada and Mexico are Arkansas's largest trade partners. Data from the Arkansas World Trade Center shows exports of goods to both countries increased by nearly 14% from 2016 to 2017. And last year, combined exports to Canada and Mexico added up to $2.1 billion. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek spoke with Angela Hoffman, Deputy Director of Farmers for Free Trade, earlier this week, about the latest round of tariffs and how they could have an impact on Arkansas's farmers and manufacturers.
Tariffs have been implemented on Canada and Mexico on their steel and aluminum. Can we just talk about what brought us to this point? That happened last week. But what's led us up to this point? It's been sort of a long process. It's been confusing.
Yes, well, you're right about it being confusing. So let me just try to simplify it in what's happening. So there's three big things that we're watching right now. One is the modernization or the renegotiation of NAFTA, and that involves Canada and Mexico. This is something that needs to be done. You know, it's an agreement that was started in 1992, so it needs modernized. It doesn't need to be throwing out the baby with bathwater. So that's been one thing that's very important, but that deal is not done. So that's hanging in the balance. Number two, the president used a little-known trade agreement, a trade authority called 232, which is used for national security. And that was invoked across many, many, many countries involving steel and aluminum. And that allows the president unilaterally to impose tariffs. So these are big tariffs. Now, our Canadian and Mexican counterparts were exempted temporarily. So that's the big caveat here, temporarily exempted. And then number three, we're in the midst of a 301. So this is a special investigation on China. So there's a lot of talk about imposing, again, taxes or tariffs on Chinese imports. So we have three big things going on right now. The last couple of weeks were kind of the perfect storm. So number one, the NAFTA talks did not conclude. And the president said very forcefully when he made the exemption that if the talks didn't conclude by June 1st, he was going to put Canada and Mexico back on the steel and aluminum list. That's where we are now. So you now have additional taxes for the state of Arkansas on imports of steel and aluminum from Canada and Mexico. And our manufacturers use a lot of those products. It's really important to their profitability that they're able to use an integrated supply chain. And number two, guess what? When you take a provision that is sort of out of context, it's not trade legal, your trading partners get to retaliate. And that's what's happening right now. So we've got tariffs on the other side. So those great products that Arkansas depend on exporting to their number one and number two trading partners, well, they're now going to face some big, stiff tariffs on the outbound side. So we're kind of caught in the crosshairs between these three big major issues related to trade. But at the end of the day, it has a real-life economic impact on Arkansas. And our governor has been standing up for NAFTA throughout the entire year. It's been such an important topic for this state because it supports over 350,000 good Arkansas jobs. Those exports are agriculture, it's light manufacturing, it's airplane parts. We really rely on Canada and Mexico, our number one and number two. That's over $3 billion worth of exports that come from our state.
So Canada made a list, announced a list of the items that they will retaliate with. That isn't going into effect until later this month. But you mentioned Mexico is our other biggest trade partner, and they are also retaliating as we speak.
Yes. Well, and today they announced and put into effect their retaliation list. Now, this is phase one. So hopefully this does not go long because this is a self-inflicted war. But we've got key issues, and agriculture is right in the middle of that list. Apples, pork, a number of products that we saw retaliated on a couple years ago during this sort of Mexican trucking dispute. So these can be pretty painful, and they can really stop a lot of our trade and the most profitable market that we have for Arkansas products.
NAFTA, it seems like, has benefited Arkansas in a lot of ways. So where do, I guess, you know, manufacturers, farmers stand in all this? What are the worries for them?
Arkansas has really benefited from NAFTA. In fact, since the implementation in 1992, our trade has expanded 700%. That's huge. And again, it's not just agriculture. It's also manufacturing. Lots of good jobs. Over 1,000 small, medium-sized companies in the state rely on NAFTA. They're exporting everything. It's pretty exciting to see it. Now, it is linked, though, to the steel tariffs because the president said it was. He was exempting them for a short term so they could conclude the deal on NAFTA. So a couple important things. One, we need to stay in NAFTA. This delegation in our state has been very vocal about continuing the benefits. We need to get it modernized. That's absolutely right. But what we don't want to see is yet another situation where, goodness gracious, we pull out of NAFTA. That you can't bear any more brunt of this economic war. Our farmers and producers just can't do it. They're seeing increase to their costs. They're seeing lost market. In the farm country, you're seeing sort of the dual side of this trade war. So not only are your markets being questioned, I mean, we export a lot of corn, grains, and more. Our buyers in Mexico are looking to other markets. They're already implementing deals from Argentina and around the world. Other people can sell the products, not our great products, but they can sell it. And number two, their costs are going up. Sort of the unintended consequences of these steel and aluminum import tariffs are the fact that their implements are more expensive. The fencing that they need to put in is more expensive, and that's going up exponentially. So they're crunched right in the middle, and it's financially very difficult.
How are these manufacturers and farmers handling this, I suppose? Can they prepare for anything? I mean, there's been so much talk of this and so much confusion, and we just don't know what's going to happen in a couple of weeks, let's say.
So one of the areas that we're seeing is it isn't just a short-term fix. So there's been a question about could, you know, a payment program or a supplemental program help? The real answer to that, and most of the producers we talk to say no, because these are long-term contracts. Take, for example, a barley grower on the Northern High Line selling their barley into Mexico. It becomes beer, and it's re-imported back to the U.S. They're getting into 10-year contracts, so it's not something that is easy to sort of turn around and find a new business partner. Similarly, there's markets where they've been working very, very hard. Keep in mind, China is also on the cutting edge. There are other tariffs and retaliatory tariffs in place that are happening. So you're seeing these other good markets that are also shutting down to U.S. products and blocking them out. So at the end of the day, where are you going to sell your product? And it's about the U.S. and the producers being reliable suppliers. And right now, that's what they need is that reliability. They need some calm in this storm where they can see and make some plans for the short term, the midterm, and ultimately the long term, recognizing these deals take a lot of work and those relationships really, really matter.
So as far as your organization and other organizations in Arkansas, like the World Trade Center, that sort of work in trade and to promote Arkansas trade. What are you guys doing to sort of mitigate some of this?
Well, first, we're trying to explain what's going on. There's so much noise out there. It is confusing. It sounds like a lot of alphabet soup and a lot of numbers. And I think at the end of the day, we're trying to bring the message home that trade is basically just common sense economics. It's what do you do to sell your product? How do you simplify the way you sell it? And at the end of the day, how do you control your costs? And those stories, I think, really resonate when farmers and ranchers are speaking up. We've launched an app on www.farmersforfreetrade.com where you can record a 15-second video. And what really resonates are the individual stories. You know, what it looks like when a producer is making decisions about what they're going to plant because they're in the field right now, or what product they may or may not buy, whether they're going to put in a grain silo, whether they're going to fix that fence. Those are the type of stories that really, really resonate with this administration and need to be told. And frankly, you know, these are farmers who put Trump in office. They didn't vote for a trade war, but he's listening to them. So they really, really, really need to be able to articulate exactly how it's hitting their bottom line, their communities, and their family.
So it sounds like the worry is that that there might not be any benefits out of this trade war for farmers here and manufacturers here.
I think at the end of the day, most of the farmers and ranchers that we would talk about would say, let's get back in the business of selling things. You know, it's really important to keep in mind that we pulled out of the TPP. That would have opened an even larger market for new products to countries like Japan, where we've been working for years and years to be able to compete. We don't want to be sitting idly by while Canada and Mexico are negotiating agreements with all of our trading partners, the Australians as well. So we'd love to see those resources and the U.S. hand strengthened at doing what we do best is negotiating new and more open markets and resolving some of these disputes instead of the back foot.
This administration does sort of frame the argument that the U.S. is losing out in the global trade market. Is that the impression that you get?
So from an agriculture perspective, agriculture has a trade surplus and has. It continues to have a trade surplus even as last week when the numbers were released, almost a $20 billion trade surplus. So it's a different perspective. And I think you have to be careful to look at the numbers, look at the services industry. This is a highly complex, you know, trade that we have in the U.S. It's manufacturing, it's agriculture and services, but net-net, it's been positive. And to Arkansas, frankly, the numbers show that it's been a net positive for us and will continue to grow. This is a state that's highly, highly reliant on trade. It's done well. It's winning in trade. It has the right products and it has the right partners.
So let's talk about China really quickly because that is part of the conversation. If we could just talk about what is happening with China, because right now the focus is on Canada, Mexico, and the EU. But all that stuff with China happened a little bit earlier. So I think it'd be good to maybe recap some of that.
Well, you know, it's really important to keep in mind that perhaps the trade deficit with China is what started all of this, is how do you reconcile that situation? And there are certain products where they have strengths, and there's certain areas where we have strengths. At the end of the day, on steel, they are already implementing retaliation against the U.S. That is happening. And we are seeing export tariffs on everything from nuts to wine already in effect. We are seeing orders canceled with product going into China, held up at port or other, you know, non-tariff barriers that are being implemented. So we've been picking that fight for a while. And the next phase is what's going to happen with respect to this 301, and that's intellectual property. And you know what? The U.S., and we support the efforts to make sure that our intellectual property rights are protected. That's a good and noble thing to do. We should be doing it. I think what everyone questions is whether or not just implementing more import tariffs or taxes is the right way to do it, because ultimately it's just the American consumer who pays that tax. So is there a better way to resolve our differences and not put yet another layer of complexity and confusion into the mix?
So are these trade negotiations, is this how they normally proceed, or is there something different this time?
It's a really interesting time because it's a combination of trade negotiations and trade tools out of a toolbox that are used on sort of other type of activities. So in the context of NAFTA and any trade negotiation, CAFTA, NAFTA, the TPP, industry members are very actively involved. So you would see representatives from your state who are very active and advising throughout the entire process. And they're heard, and their opinions really, really matter. You know, the last couple of rounds of NAFTA have been more at the top, and so there hasn't been as much visibility within the industry to what's happening. But the other trade tools, these numbers, we've moved from the sort of trade agreements to trade tools, the 232 and the 301. The 232 in particular is used for national security. It was used after the Korean War to protect the domestic steel industry. There was a very specific reason for using that tool, right? Now, that tool is being used to leverage NAFTA talks. And so the question is, why are we using a national security tool to impose sanctions on our national security partners? And that's why Canada and Mexico are, and European Union are so very concerned, because they are our national security allies. So tools are being used in a very different manner. The other thing about these tools is they're unilateral. The president can invoke them without Congress. At the end of the day, if we look back to NAFTA, and this is important to note too, we can conclude a deal with NAFTA, but our Congress still has responsibility to pass the deal. And so they're not going to pass a bad deal either. So whatever you come back with, the president still has to work with his constituencies to make sure it's the right deal and it's good for America.
And are you hearing from farmers and manufacturers that they do feel like they're getting left out of the conversation about all this?
Certainly with respect to the retaliation. They do not appreciate being sort of the pawn in the trade war because they are at the tip of the spear. And when you use a tool like this and you use it outside of its normal scope, our trading partners, and we've done it in the past too, we're authorized to retaliate. So they're doing what they can do under our global trade rules. And so I think that's been the hard part about this whole discussion is, you know, agriculture is overly bearing the brunt for how these tools are being used and how they are being focused on our trading partners.
If there was a message to sort of the people who are negotiating all this, imposing these tariffs, I mean, what would that be for coming from an Arkansas perspective?
So from an Arkansas perspective, these relationships matter. Mexico and Canada matter. They matter whether you're in agriculture, you're in manufacturing, you're in services. There are, again, over 350,000 good Arkansas jobs that matter. And we want to continue those relationships with our trading partners.
Right, because it sounds like NAFTA made Arkansas just quite a bit more prosperous as a state.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a success story for NAFTA. I think the big question is, what can we do about it? You know, one thing right now to stabilize, would we resolve NAFTA? Come to a successful conclusion of NAFTA and let producers really look into those relationships. That, incidentally, I think would also resolve a lot of the issues on steel because they are linked. So that is the one thing I think they could bring to a conclusion in the here and now. And that window is very short for what Mexico has to look at in terms of their upcoming election as well.
Well, thank you so much for stopping by our studios and filling us in on all of this.
Thanks, Ben.
That was Angela Hoffman, the Deputy Director of Farmers for Free Trade, speaking with Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek. Mexico's $3 billion in tariffs on American goods went into effect yesterday. The goods include pork, cheese, apples, potatoes, and whiskey.
91.3 is supported by Arkansas Children's Northwest, providing fast access to pediatric experts specializing in kid-sized care. Arkansas Children's Northwest is located in Springdale, across from Arvest Ballpark. Information at archildrens.org/emergency. The Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society presents the 20th annual KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series. Tickets are now available for the Bill Frisell Trio on June 14th, the Pat Bianchi Organ Trio July 14th, and the Ted Ludwig Trio August 17th. KUAF.com or digjazz.com for tickets. KUAF and the Walmart Amp are giving you the chance to win two front row tickets to see American folk singer-songwriter Ray LaMontagne and his Part of the Light tour, along with special guest Nico Case, Tuesday, June 12th. Registration is available at KUAF.com. The winner will be announced Friday, June 8th, during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large.
It is time now to get a survey of the musical landscape for the next few days, headed into the weekend with Timothy Dennis in the Herald and Blanchcock News Studio.
Welcome back to Ozarks at Large, Timothy.
Welcome back to my studio, Kyle.
Thank you.
It is going to be a survey because when I was searching for music this week, I found no fewer than 21 shows.
Okay.
Between now and Sunday.
So not everything you hear here represents the entirety.
Exactly. But we're going to hit some of the high points. Starting tonight, at Backspace, there's going to be a hard rock punk show with Sad Palomino, Whoopsie, and the Chads. It's not only a show, it's going to be a tape release show for each of the bands and cassettes. I know you've got that look on your face, but cassettes are coming back. Cassettes are coming back.
That's great. Now all we need are cassette players to come back.
I agree. I need one as well. But it's also going to be the launch of a new tape label here in Fayetteville.
Now you got me interested.
The label's called Tape Dad. You can find them on Facebook or on Instagram.
So what you're telling me is for my 65th birthday, in just under 10 years, I can have someone with their, because it'll be retro by then, their CD release.
Yes.
By then we will have gone full circle.
Yes. Or maybe even mini disc or DAT release.
The 78 RPM re-release. Okay. That's fine. Release your music however you want. That's great.
That show is going to be at Backspace. It's from 9 p.m. to midnight tonight. Tomorrow, Greyhounds will be at Meteor Guitar Gallery in Bentonville, the band, not the bus or the dog. Mm-hmm. They're an R&B, soul, and funk trio from Austin.
You opened up your door and showed me something more. Now I'm running out of love all over.
It's at Meteor Guitar Gallery that has a $15 cover, and it's from 7 to 10:30 p.m.
All right.
Let's move on to Friday. Sad Daddy's going to be back in Fayetteville.
That's always a good thing.
It's always a great thing. If you don't know, where have you been? They're an old-time folk music quartet from Eureka Springs, and they are just phenomenal.
Let's all go to Georgetown, one stop at deep fried catfish you can't tell. Straight from the river to the flame in the pot, mix stuff your mouth till you about drown. Then Joanne owns that place, Miss Judy such a play with a smiling face. Jeannie's in the kitchen laying them face, Courtney rolls rhyme up in.
That show at Stage 18 is $10 and it's from 7 to 10 p.m. Also, Friday night in Bentonville, Leslie Reynaga will be at Crystal Bridges. She's in town working with House of Songs, and it's going to be a show with Jake Herzog Band.
Oh.
Okay. She's an Austin-based singer-songwriter with a heavy Latin influence.
Shades of my agenda, paint the evening sky. As it whistles and cry, creeping through the window pane, shut the voice.
It's a free show and it's from 6 to 8 p.m. Then finally, Friday night, Red Oak Ruse will be at Chelsea's in Eureka Springs. They are a Eureka Springs based trio that's comprised of just outstanding musicians. Their music, I like to think of it as a smoothie of folk, grass, jazz, and several other styles.
Smoothie, I like that. Okay. So it's good for you.
It's good for you. It's good, wholesome music.
All right.
That show will cost $5, and it's at 9:30 p.m. Let's move on to Saturday night. The Funky Knuckles are going to be at Sunrise Stage in Fayetteville. Mm-hmm. They are a very fun-sounding Dallas-based jazz fusion group. Thank you. That show is $10, and it's from 7:30 to 10:30 p.m. at Sunrise Stage in Fayetteville. Also in Fayetteville Saturday night, Chasing Pictures will be at George's Majestic Lounge. They are a local alternative and ambient rock band. They're releasing a new album titled Closure. That show is $10. It begins at 8 p.m.
All right.
Also Saturday night in Fayetteville. See right. what I mean? There's yeah. a whole lot I of see. Stuff going yeah. on. Also Saturday night in Fayetteville, Kim Trailblazers will be at Kingfish in Fayetteville.
Is that C-H-E-M?
Yeah, like one word, one word.
Chemtrail, like, yeah. you know, what's seeding our skies or whatever.
Yeah,
okay.
although I won't get into it right now. They're actually contrails. But anyway, they're an experimental bluegrass and folk band from Little Rock.
I knew hard times, they come and they go. I come across lots of forks and twists and turns and little bumps along last weary road. But I won't fall, oh, I'll stand tall. And in life's rubble bone.
It's at Kingfish, so it's an outdoor show. It'll be from 9 p.m. to midnight.
Okay.
And then finally Saturday night, O.C. Fisher is going to be at Chelsea's in Eureka Springs.
Ah, it's been a while since I've seen and heard O.C.
Same here, but she is just a fantastic blues and soul singer.
Yeah.
That show at Chelsea's is a $5 show, and it will begin at 9:30. And then one last show for this weekend.
And it's a Wax Cylinder release?
No.
Okay.
Although,
all right.
although it's music that could fit on a Wax Cylinder. Still on the Hill is going to be at Sassafras Springs.
Oh.
It's part of Artist Sphere, the Chapel Music Series, so they're going to be in the Chapel Ruins at the winery. Yeah. And they're going to be playing Water Songs, so songs from their two River albums.
Excellent. Once a river, still a river.
Exactly, exactly. That show is $10 through Walton Arts Center's box office, and that will take place from 6:30 to 9:30 p.m.
And that is on?
Sunday.
Sunday, okay. We've got you covered every day until the end of the weekend.
Exactly.
Thank you, Timothy.
Thank you.
Whisper to us, saying Buffalo River, flow river across. This wild land unspoiled by the hand of man. Within the hanging clouds, where they finally disappear.
A few minutes ago, there was a mention of the KUAF Summer Night Swing event on June 22nd at the Fayetteville Public Library. That announcement mentioned there were limited tickets. Let me tell you just how limited. About 2.5 hours ago, when I last checked, there were 15 tickets left to see the guys from Trout Fishing America, Claudia Burson, Darren Novotny, Steve Fisher, Ben Harris, Ed Nicholson, and about a half dozen other musicians, all performing in this once-in-a-lifetime setting for this one-night-only fundraising event for KUAF that celebrates the two longest-running shows on 91.3, and I think in all of Northwest Arkansas, we still need to find out when Dial a Trade started. The Pick and Post with Mike Shirky, Shades of Jazz with Robert Ginsberg. All of this going on June 22nd. Still, no more than 15 tickets are left at digjazz.com. All the details about the show at KUAF.com. Should also tell you the Arkansas Razorback baseball team will meet South Carolina this weekend for a best-of-three Super Regional that sends the winner to the College World Series. Yesterday, three Razorbacks were selected in the Major League Baseball draft. Pitcher Blaine Knight was picked by Baltimore. Outfielder Eric Cole selected by the 2015 World Champion Kansas City Royals. And catcher Grant Cook picked by the Pittsburgh Pirates. All three players are juniors. Players and their agents will negotiate with Major League teams after the college season concludes.
A free art workshop for children 7 to 12 will be held Friday, June 8th from 9:30 a.m. until 1 p.m. at the Fayetteville Public Library. This children's grief workshop is designed for children who've lost a family member or loved one and need a creative and healing way to express feelings. Registration is required. 872-3364 or the Grief Center at Circle of Life Hospice for more. 91.3 is supported by the Walmart Museum, a family-friendly experience featuring interactive displays on the history of Walmart, Walton's Five and Dime, and the Spark Cafe Soda Fountain. Located on the square in downtown Bentonville, it's open daily until 9 p.m. Admission is free. 273-1329 or walmartmuseum.com.
A listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, and Siloam Springs. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks so much for listening. Don't forget, we are available as a free podcast. By we, I mean Ozarks at Large. You can subscribe to the Ozarks at Large podcast and listen to us whenever you want by going to services like iTunes and Stitcher. Or if you'd rather hear just individual stories or interviews and perhaps share them with friends through email and social media, you can do that by going to ozarksatlarge.com. And there's one more way to hear recent editions of Ozarks at Large, or perhaps listen to us live if you're out of the area, and that's by downloading the free KUAF app that works on many smartphones and tablets. It's all explained at ozarksatlarge.com. Back tomorrow at noon and 7 with another brand new edition of Ozarks at Large. On the agenda for tomorrow, a quick preview of the new play festival through Theater Squared that begins this weekend. And then, just to put a bug in your ear, next week on our show, early in the week, I believe, a tour of the still very much in progress brand new Theater Squared building. Had a chance to tour that today among the girders and rebar. We'll bring you that story sometime next week. Tomorrow, in advance of the new play festival. Plus, this week's edition of the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report and much more tomorrow at noon and 7 on Ozarks at Large on 91.3. We're going to end this Wednesday edition of Ozarks at Large with music from Copeland Bates. You can find out more about Copeland at his Copeland Bates Music Facebook page. This was a song recorded for Ozarks at Large exclusively at the Carver Center for Public Radio, April Showers. Thanks so much for spending part of your Thursday with us. We do appreciate it. And as always, we look forward to another program with you tomorrow at noon and 7.
I hide the fact, discovered my own tears, and I got this feeling that you just don't really care. I look up at the sky and I sometimes sit and I ask God why. What's my backup plan? Cause when your hand it touches my hand like that, I seem to fill with anticipation. What it means, and maybe it's just a funny thing, or it means nothing at all, nothing at all. Nothing at all. Your way, you gotta do it like that. You soon want to win, don't turn your back. And I guess I know what that means. Maybe I just wanna be the one to make sure all your deeds are done. I really wish it would just stop snowing, cause I got this feeling that you just don't give a damn, no, no. I look up at the sky and I sometimes say, and I ask God why, what's my backup plan? Cause when our eyes meet, it's like the very first time, and I can't say nothing but a sentimental love line. I don't know what it means. Maybe it means just nothing at all. Your hand, it touches my hand like that, I seem to feel with anticipation. I don't know what it means, and maybe it's just a funny thing, or it means nothing at all. Nothing at all. Nothing at all.